In this week's Torah portion, Parshat Bechar, we're at the mountain, and the Almighty gives us in Leviticus 25 the laws concerning the sabbatical year and the year of Jubilee. He explains that we were to have the land enjoy a Sabbath every seventh year. We wouldn't harvest, we wouldn't plow, and then after seven sets of sabbatical years, on the 50th year, we'd have the Jubilee year. I'm going to read one verse, verse 13, concerning the year of Jubilee. Leviticus 25:13. In the year of this Jubilee, ye shall return every man unto his possession. The Almighty says, one of the purposes of the Jubilee is that you would get your land back. He said, no one can sell the land in perpetuity. No one can sell it forever because the land is mine and you can live there and it will stay according to the divisions of the tribes. It won't pass from one to the other, but it's your land and you will keep it. In the Haftarah portion in Jeremiah chapter 32, we have a related story. I'm going to read the first few verses, or summarize the first few verses. Jeremiah chapter 32, the first three verses say that Jeremiah is in prison. He's preached, and the kingdom said, "Hey, you're a traitor. You're telling people to join Nebuchadnezzar," so they put him in prison. And the Almighty had told him, "Preach these words. The nation's going to be destroyed." We're going to pick up verses 6 through 8. So Jeremiah is in prison while this comes to him. And Jeremiah said, "The word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Behold, Hanamiel, the son of Shalom, thine uncle, shall come unto thee, saying, Buy thee my field that is in Anatot, for the right of redemption is thine to buy it. So Hanamiel, mine uncle's son, came to me in the court of the prison, according to the word of Yahweh, and said unto me, Buy my field, I pray thee, that is in Anatot, which is in the country of Benjamin, for the right of inheritance is thine, and the redemption is thine. Buy it for thyself." Then I knew that this was the word of Yahweh. Jerusalem is surrounded. Nebuchadnezzar's armies are about to destroy, and they destroy it in just a few more chapters. The prophet Jeremiah is in prison himself, and the Almighty sends a message to him, Jeremiah, your uncle's going to come and ask you to redeem this. Redeem it. What sense does this make? I'm in prison. I don't even know if I'm going to get out alive. Even if I do get out alive, Nebuchadnezzar's going to level this place. You've already told me. I've been preaching it for years. Why? And then his uncle comes. He said, This is true. I know this is true. He told me he would... My uncle comes, and he says, all right, I'm supposed to do this. Verse 9 and 10. So I bought the field of Hanamiel, my uncle's son, that was in Anatoth, and weighed him the money, even 17 shekels of silver. I subscribed the evidence and sealed it and took witnesses and weighed him the money in the balance. So they wrote the deed, he gave him the money, they brought witnesses, and said, now everything's done. He gives the evidence to Baruch for him to keep it. In verse 16, in verse 17, we have the source of a very amazing song for believers. Ah, Yahweh, thou hast made the heavens and the earth by thy great hands. Nothing is too difficult for thee. I'm going to pick up in verse 22. And hast given them this land which thou didst swear to their fathers to give them, a land flowing with milk and honey. Now, this is not the source of the song I'm about to ask you, but a land flowing with milk and honey. Eretz Zavat Halav, Halav Udvash. When do we sing this song? On Shavuot, we sing this song. And it says, I'm going to redeem this land. We're going to turn to Ruth, but I know you all know the reference already. And I'm going to bring witnesses for me. And who's selling me the land? My uncle's son. Now, the right of redemption is only for a relative, but this is your uncle's son. Bring it to you. There's going to be witnesses. And there's a redemption. And for some reason, you bring up land flowing with milk and honey. Turn with me to Habakkuk chapter 2. Habakkuk is an amazing book. It has some very, very inspiring verses. We sing the last few verses of the book about the fig tree not blossoming. We sing several other verses in this. The book really is set with a very tragic background. It's talking about the Chaldeans. In chapter 1, verse 6, "Behold, I'm raising up the Chaldeans. That nation will march through the breast of the land, possess the dwelling places not theirs." Habakkuk 1:6 says, "The Babylonians are coming. They're not coming right now, but they will come. I'm going to raise them up." We're going to read in Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. "And Yahweh answered me and said, Write the vision, make it plain upon tables, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come, and it will not tarry." The sages, when they looked at these verses, trying to understand, what is he talking about? And they said, well, they're talking about Babylon coming to destroy us, but it will end. Babylon will not hold on to us forever, and we'll be redeemed. We will get our land back. Some of the other sages pointed out and says, the end, in the end it will speak. I said, well, it means the end of time. It's a prophecy about Messiah. The Messiah will come at the end, and the captivity will end. In Targum Yonatan, a Targum is a translation of the Hebrew into Aramaic. So people who could not read Hebrew and could read Aramaic, they would read this. But also the writers of the Targums would change some of the words purposely to reflect how it was understood by most of the leaders of the time. So in Targum Yonatan, they said that the vision is for an appointed time. At the end it will speak. And they said, well, this is referring to something that was already written, but we're not going to understand until later. And the rabbi said, oh, they're talking about the laws of redemption carried in, we read today in Leviticus 25 about the laws of Jubilee. They said, well, this is the laws of Jubilee from chapter 26 in Leviticus, where it says, if we don't keep the sabbatical, we can still be redeemed from that. So we're tying in again to the same Torah portion. But I want us to notice, there's something about redeeming and the end of time. With that background, I want us to turn to the last chapter of the book of Ruth. We all know the story, and we're not going to go through most of it today. We're going to just really turn to the end. Ruth chapter 4. Boaz is at the point where he said, I'm going to redeem Ruth. But there's a problem. There's another person. Amoni Palomi, he's in the way. This person, as we translate in English, what's his name? Or in the King James, ho, such a one. Is a man whose name just disappeared because he didn't continue doing what the Almighty had wanted. We're in Ruth chapter 4. We're going to read verses 1 through 4. Then went Boaz up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit ye down here. And they sat down. And he said unto the kinsmen, Naomi, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is none to redeem it beside thee, for I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. He agreed. He said, this is great. And then Boaz said, but the day you redeem it. You have to also purchase Ruth to be your wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon the inheritance. Now, in this passage, we talked, and we mentioned this in Jeremiah, and it was mentioned in the Torah portion. The right of redemption was by the near kinsman. And the expression near kinsman is very interesting, because in Hebrew it doesn't say that. It says goel. It means the redeemer. So it's someone who's close to you, and for some reason we called him the near kinsman, but really it's not his relationship that's defined, it's his action, that he was a redeemer. So here we see a near relative coming. The issue again is redeeming the land. And he said, you're going to raise up a name for the dead. Now this is prophetic besides being literal. Remember what we read in Jeremiah. We read, we're surrounded by Nebuchadnezzar's armies, and 1 million people were going to die in that battle. Just in Jerusalem, 1 million people. It was a horrible thing. But he prophesies here, whether he realized it or not. Verse 6, and the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. He said, no, I can't do this. My inheritance, I can't bring another child and confuse the matter and take a second wife. So Boaz says he's going to redeem it. We're going to pick up 9 and 10. And Boaz said unto the elders and unto all the people, you are witnesses this day that I bought all that was Elimelech's, all that was Chilion's, all that was Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth Moabite is the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon its inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren and from the gate of his place. You are witnesses this day. Remember, we talked about Jeremiah saying, well, I had to get witnesses, and I had to have people see that I'm the one who's redeeming it. We see here Boaz is doing the same thing. They're calling witnesses to be the ones who see and will testify, yes, he redeemed it. This is all his now. In Habakkuk, remember we have a prophecy which the rabbis say they're really talking about Nebuchadnezzar capturing a land and where it's going to be redeemed. But a lot of other sages said this is also a prophecy. In the end it will speak, meaning the coming of Messiah. He will come and he will redeem us. At the end, all of this will make sense. So you can say, oh, Boaz, he's going to marry Ruth. He's going to have a son by her. But the son technically is his, but technically it's not. Technically it belongs to Mahlon. So Mahlon's name won't vanish from off the face of the earth. His inheritance will continue. Picking up verse 11. And all the people that were in the gate and the elders, we are witnesses. Yahweh make this woman that is come into the house like Rachel and like Leah, which two have built the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephrathah be famous in Bethlehem. They said, we are witnesses. We know that you're the one redeeming this. Make this woman like Rachel and Leah, and do worthily in Ephrathah be famous in Bethlehem. Ephrathah, Bethlehem, we remember the prophecy from Micah. Though Ephrathah, Bethlehem of Ephrathah, though there be the least in the kingdom, out of you will come the Redeemer. Why did these women say this? Maybe the same reason we read in Habakkuk. This is a prophecy that is for the end. They are actually prophesying. I don't think they know this, but they're prophesying about Yeshua here, about the coming of Yeshua. Verse 12, and let thy house be like the house of Pharaohs, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, of the seed which Yahweh shall give thee of this young woman. May she be like Pharaohs, who Tamar bore unto Judah. Well, that's not a very, very pleasant story about Tamar. We've talked about this in the past. It's considered a messianic prophecy that those twins, Pharaohs and Zerah, were born. And they're referencing this. Do they know that they're referencing a messianic prophecy? I don't think so. I don't think they understand what they're saying. Verse 15, the women are saying, 14 and 15,
The woman said unto Naomi, blessed be Yahweh, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman. In Hebrew, a redeemer. That his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of life, a nourisher of thine own age, for thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons hath borne him. And the women are saying, the redeemer is not Boaz. Boaz presumably is now gone. He's dead. And there's a Jewish teaching on this because they said, Naomi, you're going to be redeemed by this near kinsman because Ruth hath borne him to you. Ruth gave birth to him. They're not talking about Boaz. They're talking about the baby who was born. This baby is a redeemer who's going to bring life from the dead. What are you talking about here? Restore of life. In some of the English versions, it says thy life. And if you notice the words in italics, it's not there in Hebrew. And in Hebrew, it doesn't say that. Restore of life. This baby is a redeemer and will bring life. Who are we talking about here? What is this whole passage about? We're going to skip down to verse 22. And Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. Why do they add this? Because the vision is for the future. It will tarry. This whole redemption, the whole reason we study the redemption is to understand our true Redeemer. The Redeemer that will come at the end, he will not tarry. He will come when he should, and then we'll understand. But our Torah portion is all prophetic of Yeshua. Blessed be his name.